You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers from the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily local sports podcast network. I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager at FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog. On today's show, I'm joined by Kevin Stankiewicz from the Columbus Dispatch to talk about the early weirdness of the calf season. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A 5-star review, by the way, is the best way to support the show. And you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, and me on Twitter and Facebook at CWRant. You can find today's guest, Kevin Stankiewicz, on Twitter at Kevin_Stank. Kevin, what's going on?
Hey Chris, what's up?
I got your Twitter handle right? Like I didn't like just that imagine is, that. Okay.
Yeah. You got so, it memorized so, by now. I'm impressed.
I would hope so, considering like I just pops up all the time. So we're going to cover in this show a bunch of different weird Cavs things. On the end of the show, after Kevin bids adieu, because no one deserves to talk about Cavs. No one really needs to talk about Cavs Nets. I'm going to give you three things to look for in Cavs Nets later on in the show. And then tomorrow, obviously, we'll recap Cavs Nets. But Kevin, let's start with the J.R. Smith situation. We're recording this on Monday, October 22nd. So things could have changed by then. By the time you hear this, the Cavs have not spoken since then. So perhaps I will add something in there, depending on what they say on a Tuesday. But JR posted various things on social media on Sunday and Monday that basically indicate that he is not super happy right now, that he doesn't know why he's not playing, that the people need to ask the organization why he's not playing. This comes after he was injured in preseason, played 4 minutes against the Wolves, didn't play the rest of the game, then didn't play against the Hawks at all after Ty said he would play 10 guys and only played 9. Just what do you make of what's going on with JR right now and just how this is occurring in a very public, passive-aggressive manner? Like, this guy posted a Rihanna meme on Monday. Like, that's where we're at already, 3 games in.
Well, yeah, I would say I'm not surprised that this is happening. I am surprised it's not even the fourth game of the season, and it's already happening right now. I expected there to be, particularly with JR and some other veterans on the team, some frustration about the trajectory that the season ends up taking. And just things about, frankly, playing time and that balance between younger and older guys. I expected there to be some challenges that those veterans had, particularly JR. And now to see him posting this stuff on social media here after 3 games, I am a little surprised that it's come so quickly. But, I mean, that's JR, right? I mean, we know who this player is. He's been this way his whole career, you know, and kind of drawing attention and never being one to really just stay quiet when he's frustrated. So I that's what you live and die with when you have a player like JR on his team. And unfortunately, we just don't have a LeBron now to tame it or make it worth it.
Kevin, if you're Ty Lue, if you're Dan Gilbert, if you're Kobe Altman, you see this going on with JR, what do you do to nip this and to make it less awkward? Like, how do you even like make this not awkward? Is it inherently just like an uncomfortable situation?
Oh, I think it's inherently uncomfortable, but the question to me really boils down to what is this the point of this season? If it's really to compete and try and get the 8 seed, I'm not necessarily sure why JR isn't playing. This is a team that needs guys who can create their own shot. You don't always love JR's shot selection, but there's no doubt that he can, compared to the other players on this team, create his own shot. And I think it's fair to think that he should play if that is that you're trying to win games and, you know, get that 7 or 8 seed. Now, if your thought process is playing younger guys and letting these guys develop and just work through some kinks, then I think you need to just be upfront about that and have that conversation with JR and that way you don't have these situations, and then maybe you can try and negotiate a buyout with him, et cetera, et cetera. But I think right now, as JR had indicated, he said, why aren't you playing? Ask the team. It doesn't seem like there's really clear communication to him either. So I think that's also incumbent a little bit on the management, Ty Lue and Kobe Altman, to sort of define what the season's supposed to be and just be clear with some of your veterans who gave you, you know, 2.5, 3 good seasons under LeBron and who frankly deserve, I think, just to be up very upfront with them about what this season is going to be.
So if you're Ty, and I think that's fair. I think, and if you need to move on from JR in some way, like maybe a buyout it's not too early to think about that. I mean, that's like drastic, but probably not going to be able to trade the guy. I'm unconvinced you could flip him even with that unguaranteed money next year. That's a complicated thing. His trade value wasn't good when he was making much less money and had just won Sixth Man of the Year. He's functionally past his prime now. When you look at this roster, let's say Ty does play 10 guys, and that's sort of like the number he put out there on Sunday, and then only played 9 guys in the rotation. If you were to say they're going to play 10 guys, and you're going to play another wing, and not Ante Zizic, which I think is probably the right move, you have JR, you have Kyle Korver, you have David Nwaba for that last spot. Who would you like to see?
Well, as I had kind of alluded to back there, it really does come down to what this season is supposed to be. I frankly, you know, I like the idea of Nwaba playing a little bit, particularly given the team's early struggles on defense. I think they're 29th in the league already. Sure, it's a small sample size, but that's right where they were last year. So to me, you're really looking at some defensive challenges. And we know that his activity on the defensive end certainly separates him from other players on this team. So I really like the idea of getting him some minutes and trying to see what he can bring. Obviously, you know, still quite young players. I think he's 25, not really been up here in the NBA for too many years. So I still think he's got a lot of potential to sort of hone out and really develop himself. So I love the idea of giving him minutes. But as I had said, if you're really trying to win games, the team could use some help creating shots. And therefore, you know, the idea of playing JR to me is also entertaining. He doesn't really help you on defense at all. He keeps you still having some of those challenges on transition defense. So he doesn't help there. But if you're really trying to win games, I do think they could use some help on the offensive end too. And playing JR, I think, would make the most sense there. So it's really just kind of deciding what direction you want this season to go. I know it's early, and but I think you have to really choose, because by sort of keeping it very opaque, you get the JR thing where he's like, why the heck aren't I playing, when frankly he's probably one of the 10 best guys on the team. But if your thought is, hey, we're just playing all our young guys, well, then it makes sense that JR is sitting. But you just really got to define that direction. And that's how I think you answer that question.
I think the issue I would sort of have with picking JR, and he's maybe the best player right now in a vacuum of those three, I think that's a reasonable take. I think the thing with him is I am a little bit unsure exactly where we are with him in terms of his ability to just kind of seamlessly fit in with Korver. You know, he's going to run off screens, take threes, just sort of do things that are going to help you and help you. Like, he's a good guy to kind of pair with Sexton in that regard, or work off of Clarkson. JR could have some freelancing tendencies. That's not an unreasonable thing to worry about with him. With the Wobble, like, he's just not a shooter. The Cavs can say he can make threes and he hit one in preseason. Not a good shooter, but he is a good cutter. He's definitely, I think, the best defender of the three and the youngest guy. So maybe there's a little bit more malleable talent there. I would like to see Nwaba. He was inactive against the Hawks. I think he's not totally in the plans right now, which is fine. But it is what it is. I think for the Cavs, you just need to resolve this. Like, you have enough. My general thing with the JR thing is, like, the stuff like this is going to happen. I'm not surprised that there's someone unhappy with things sort of already, because it is kind of just a weird situation on this with this team, with this organization. But I think my general thing with it is just get it resolved in some way sooner rather than later, and just find a way to nip it and make it not a problem. Because it's not great when a guy who's pretty popular with the fan base, who was on a title-winning team, who you're 3 games into the season with, who you had some issues with last year when you brought Dwayne freaking Wade in and didn't want to go to the bench then, is like tweeting and posting an Instagram comment about why he's not sure he's not playing. That's a weird way to start the year. You should figure out how to deal with that in the most functional way possible, and like just not be a tire fire 3 games into the year.
Exactly, and particularly because I think it's clear that the front office really does want this to be more of a development year, and they really want these young players to develop in the best environment possible. You know, that's why Channing Frye is here. You know what I mean? They really do want a healthy environment for some of the younger talent to sort of nurture and grow in, and this is certainly not helping. You know, Colin Sexton should not be worrying or have to even. I don't really think he's spending too much time of his own day thinking about that, but just there should be no distractions for him and Chetty and these other young players as they sort of figure out what they're going to be and how they're going to be the best professionals possible. And having this kind of sideshow certainly is not great 3 games in. Now, real quick, with what you're saying about Korver, I do agree. I mean, with Nwaba, though, I mean, what kind of lineup do you think, you know, just for listeners, what kind of lineups could you see him fitting in if he is that 10th guy that they wanted to go to in the rotation?
They're already playing kind of smaller 3-guard lineups. I think he makes sense. I think you, with him and Sexton, it's a little tough, which kind of complicates things because he's just not a shooter and Sexton isn't a shooter right now. So I would say maybe you get him with Hill. You could get him with Clarkson, and you could get him with Osman. I think you can kind of just make it work with him. And look, it might just be a point where you just want to play him and just see what happens and just figure out the lineup stuff later. Like, some of the, it's a lot harder to be, I'm a lot less concerned with, like, lineup optimization when, like, you're just nothing doing, not a lot competent right now. Like, I will not look at it, the numbers, like, the big picture season and number rankings until they've played 5 games. That is just like a personal thing for me, is I just will not look at those season stats for a team in terms of analytics until we get through a couple games. I'm gonna get a sample size before I sort of evaluate things and look at the film and kind of break it down. I'm sure the Cavs are not faring well right now in categories to some degree.
That is probably true.
Even if they're like putting up points, like they're not doing it in a way that is like efficient. At that point, I just want to see if you can get a lineup that can do anything well. And that's just like, I need to see like some data. I mean, like, we just saw Colin Sexton and George Hill play together for the first time all year. And after 8.5 quarters, that is how early we are in this season. I want to see some stuff develop before I look at that. But if I was going to say I was going to put Nwaba with one guy, I think him and Hood can make some sense in terms of complementing each other and making up for each other's weaknesses. So maybe you go something like Clarkson, Nwaba, Hood. You could go Nwaba, Sexton, Hood. I think that would be fine too. Him and Jetty could at least get after guys on defense, and I'd be okay with that.
Right. The nice thing about Nwaba is because of his length, you know, he can defend multiple spots on the perimeter too. So if you're looking at lineups there, I think he just does have some defensive flexibility. So I he would be the guy I would play just because I'm sort of intrigued by him. I find him to be somewhat interesting. And as you were kind of saying, just putting him out there and seeing what some of these players are able to contribute, I think that makes sense right now. So I do hope to see him get some action here early on. I know, as you had mentioned, he was in street clothes on Sunday. So I do hope to see him just get some minutes here in these next couple games and really just get a really good sense of what he can do outside the preseason, so you know what course to chart with in the future.
Yeah, I'm with that. So we're going to take a quick break here from today's sponsors from the show, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some frustrations with the season, if it's fair to be frustrated with this Cavs team or not. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we're back. So, Kevin, we're going to run through just a couple frustration-based things. So you look at this team. Tristan Thompson, You can find the quote. It's not a, he basically just openly frustrated. Kevin Love used the word alarmed. The tone and the vibe was not good in the locker room the other night. Is it fair for these players? And specifically, I'd say the veteran guys, the Kevin Loves, the Tristan Thompsons, the George Hills of the world, to be frustrated with where things are at already.
Again, this is tough. Because as you were just saying with wanting to wait for a sample size, I mean, we are only 3 games in here. So everything does seem like an overreaction, whether you're talking about lineup combinations or turnover margin or transition defense. I mean, everything is kind of an overreaction at some level through 3 games. Having said that, I don't see much, in the tea leaves to suggest that the team is going to get much better than this. So I do think, you know, the frustration, it's just, it was only a matter of time before it reared its head. So whether it was 3 games, 5 games, 7 games, it was going to happen. And I think it's somewhat fair, frankly. I mean, these were players who, you know, loved signing the extension. So he kind of knew what he was getting into otherwise. But, you know, a lot of these players agreed to come here when the trajectory and the future of this team was much different. And these folks are competitors that you know, they want to play high-level basketball. They were used to playing with the greatest player ever, and now they don't have that or anything close to that. And so they're frustrated. I think it's fair. I really do think it's fair. But it comes down to just finding ways to channel that frustration into positive things. You can't be a drag. Veterans need to set a better example. So they can't be, I don't think, bringing down some of these younger players with their frustration. They need to find a way to channel that into some sort of constructive way. But I think it's fair. I just would hate to see that hamper some of the development of some of the younger players. So it's tough, but it's not going to be a quick season. It's going to be a long one. And I do feel for some of these guys who came here thinking they would be playing on a much different team than the one they are now.
I would agree. I would also say it's 3 games, and I wouldn't, like, I would say you have to kind of, I think, if you're anyone in the situation, if you're a fan, if you're a media member, you have to just kind of, like, keep, if you're a player, most importantly, if you're a coach, most importantly, because it's your job to, like, be, like, invested in that. I think you got to take it as it comes. I don't think it's worth getting super frustrated, but I would be a little bit alarmed if things had gone this bad. And, like, I think Kevin Love sort of encapsulated this, like, at home against Atlanta. Tristan kind of hit on this as well. Ty hit on this, like, Atlanta's a team you, for the Cavs, like, you feel like you should beat. Yeah, you can understand, like, losing in Minnesota with Jimmy Butler and Kat, like, that's understandable. Losing in Toronto, like, on opening night, like, that Toronto might be the best team in the East. Like, that's reasonable. Losing to Atlanta like you did is just, like, is a gut punch. And I think how raw that can be immediately after a game, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Particularly a game, too, that they, you know, they were up by 15 in the first quarter.
A 37-point swing, and it was, like, midway through the second, and they're still up by double digits.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think you make great points. And that was the thing that I know we were kind of talking a little bit during the game yesterday. I mean, yeah, it started out, they looked fine, you know what I mean? And then to see it really fall off the deep end like that, yeah, there's going to be some frustration. And that's to be expected. And again, that's because these guys want to be good. They want to compete at a high level. So you can't fault them for that. I just think it's, again, as I had mentioned, just finding ways to turn that into something positive, because it's going to be a long season, and you'd hate to just have some, like, you know, back and forth nonsense to really be worrying about for too much of it. You want to be focusing on the development of your young players.
No, I 100% agree. But it's 3 games. I don't think this is a breaking point yet, or at least it shouldn't be. Like, that's pretty alarming if it is an actual breaking point. But if you were the Caps and you were, like, looking real far out, we're gonna bring this back in kind of more grounded before Kevin gets out of here. But if you look at, like, what to you would be, like, a breaking point in terms of, okay, like, let's just play all the young guys, let's just focus on development, let's just focus on that and, like, not even worry about this anymore. When to you, like, what would be a breaking point?
Yeah, that's a, like, great question.
It's hard to know right now. Like, and I say that considering, like, I think there's a good chance the Cavs are 0-6 when they play the Hawks again next week. Like, it would not shock me if they, like, haven't won a game by the time they play Atlanta again. And, like, if that happens and they lose to Indiana and they lose to Brooklyn and they lose to Detroit, like, it's only going to become, like, more uncomfortable. It's only going to get more awkward. And, like, they play, like, Denver next week. Like, I'm sure they're going to lose to Denver by 30 at home. They're screwed in that game. I've already just marked that one off as an L, but, like, that's where we're at. And, like, that's not great. But, like, no. I feel like if that's your breaking point already, like, then, like, what are we doing here if that's it?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, like, what would be, like, the best scale to answer it on. Like, is it through 20 games and they're 2-18 or something like that? I don't really know. I guess it would just be a couple more instances of really losing games in a bad way that are winnable games going into them. Like, I don't think getting blown out by, let's say they play Denver next, which I know that's not how the schedule works. Like, and they lose by 30. I don't think that's a breaking point. I think you can chalk that up to being, okay, well, there's no way we're going to compete with them no matter what. But if, you know, through a dozen and a half games, you're losing all of the winnable games you have on your schedule, I think that's really when it becomes like a breaking point. When you're not even competing against the few teams that you can compete with, that would be alarming to me. But, you know, like losing to Toronto, I mean, that's fine. That's going to happen. Like, whether it's the first game or the 21st game, you're probably losing to Toronto. So that's really what I would say would be a breaking point after maybe like 15, 20 games and you haven't beat a single team you should beat.
I feel like if they lose to Atlanta next week and they're like 0-7 at that point, or even if like they beat Brooklyn this week, which is possible, or they like beat Detroit or like, you know, somehow beat Indiana, and Indiana is like clearly going to be much better. That'll be weird. And I'm like, I said this on the pod that went up on Tuesday, but I don't always love when teams play, like you play a team like really close. I like to see like how things sort of like change. Like in terms of evaluation, I like when things are more spaced out. I'm like kind of happy the Cavs play the Hawks again so soon. Like, I think there's something like those two data points being so close that I want to see how those things break down and how the Cavs like adapt in that short amount of time. I think there's something really interesting about that idea. Like, let's just see how they like handle some, like that loss and how they look in the week since, and then how they look being in the same building against the same team three games later. I want to see that. And like, you know, they're probably not going to be thinking about that game. They probably, I'm not going to stew on that game. I don't get the vibe that they're like obsessed over it. And like, yes, some of these losses like feel sort of like some of like the LeBron era losses where like you lose and then you just kind of have to figure it out. But I don't know. And like, just this team, like, how much slack can you, I did not get the vibe, I'll just say this, like that the enthusiasm from the fan base is super high, and I don't know how much slack people are going to cut this group if they're bad. And like, if you're a player, I think you have to cut yourself more slack and give yourself time to figure yourself out post LeBron. I think the fan base is a different question.
Yeah, I think so too. In terms of how much slack to give it, like, I was thinking back, so I remember. It was one of the, I can't really remember which year it was. I guess it was a bit, would have been my senior year in high school. LeBron, it was the years where he was gone still. And it was a home opener. I'm pretty sure they played the Nets. And like me and 12 friends from high school or something like that just decided on opening day to go down. And we were able to find like an entire.
Wait, was this the Andrew Bynum game?
Oh man, I don't know.
Because I went to a home opener I would have been a sophomore in college, where I drove from Athens, Ohio with that, Chris Longo.
That might have been, yeah, no, that was
Nick Harley. We met Colin, up
with Longo.
That, yes, yes, because you were, yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do.
Do you remember meeting with Longo on the upper deck?
Yes, because I was like, I was trying to pitch you on OU still at that point, and so was Chris. And then yeah, we were trying to sell you. Yeah, but that was, yeah, so, yeah, that was what a time. And the Andrew Bynum game, wild. And the pop he got, wild.
Right. And so for that game, I mean, we literally like bought an entire row of tickets. You know what I mean? Like, they just, we walked up, we hadn't bought them before. It was kind of a spur of the moment thing. And so like, I'm just thinking back to that era and okay, how much slack should you give them? I just think the reality is there's gotta be some level of slack. I know Cleveland fans, we don't have a ton of patience. You know, we're tired of it. And so the tendency just kind of default into just getting frustrated really early. But look, you had the greatest player in NBA history on your team and he leaves and you have a crater that just, it's impossible to fill in 1 year, in 2 years, in 3 years, frankly. You might not ever fill it. So you've got to have some slack. Is difficult as that for me to swallow, you know, because it's frustrating. I want to see good basketball, but You really do have to just understand that they are facing just a ridiculous challenge in trying to replace LeBron and be competitive. And so just be mindful of that. I want to just see as much positives as I can in each game. I'm obviously, hopefully they win. I think they won 19 the first year after LeBron left. Hopefully they can win a few more than that. But to me, it's really just going to come down to seeing positive things, even if it's a close game, they lose by five. But, you know, Chetty has 28 and makes five threes or something like that. That's really going to be the bench for me throughout the year, is just positives to hang my hat on for next season and the season beyond that. But just have a really, really loose rope this year going into it.
If they win 19 this year, good Lord. That would be tough. That would be a tough vibe, and the vibe around the arena again was not necessarily super enthusiastic on opening night. And some of that could have been, it's a Sunday, the Browns had, you know, been playing it, like the Browns game was like going on like very close, and the Browns are kind of fun right now. There's questions there.
That didn't help. Certainly no. The Browns, that did not help.
No, and like if the Browns had been home, it would have been like there's no question that would have been even more dead. But Kevin, we'll wrap it up on this. The Cavs have three games this week. Again, Brooklyn, Detroit, Indiana. What is something you would like to see over the course of those three games that to you would inspire some sort of like a more optimism about the team? And then on the flip side of that, what's something that could go wrong that you would say, okay, this is something I'm concerned about now?
Yeah. I'd love to see Love get a little bit more efficient. I mean, he's played decently. I mean, he's rebounding the ball at a very high rate, and is, you know, scoring points, but he's not doing so efficiently from the field. So I think, to me, if your best player can really round into shape early on in the season, I think if you don't have to really worry about Love, like, that makes it a lot easier if you can just really count on him to be an efficient all-star level player. So for me, through these next three games, I want to see Love really get back, and then I can stop worrying about him. And then I can worry about, you know, Chetty's turnovers and Sexton on offense and his ridiculous mid-range obsession, which you noted on the recap pod, I think, Sunday night or Monday morning. So to me, it really is Love. And it's just, I want to make sure that he's not something that we have to really worry about, you know, from an evaluation standpoint. So that would be my answer to the first question. And then that's like the last one is tough, because I feel like there's so many possibilities of things. But just, I would say understanding the defensive approach a little bit better. I know that was something that a lot of players talked about after the game. And you had mentioned it, with them switching everything on screens. I just like to see them get a little bit more communicative. So if that's still an issue, if getting back on defense, transition defense is still a glaring hole after three games, I'm going to be really concerned about that, because that's all effort. That's really just being committed to doing it and really wanting to just hustle back to the end of the floor and being mindful of that. So if they can't fix that through six games after it plagued them all last year too, that would just be frustrating to me, because that's not a hard thing to fix.
Yeah, I would say if Colin Sexton just like plays like he did against Atlanta for a week, that would be rough. That would be kind of a tough thing. And if they just like make players like Alex Len look like Shaq again, not gonna be great. But Kevin, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on. You can find Kevin on Twitter at Kevin Stank. Find the Columbus Pivots. Kevin, I'm gonna give you 1 minute, 30 seconds to a minute, and I'm gonna let you pitch people before we go to our last ad break about why they should subscribe to the Columbus Dispatch. I'm putting you on the spot. Make your pitch. Let's go.
All right. Here's why you subscribe to the Dispatch. I'm not sure where this listenership is from, but
I had listeners in Russia who very much care about United States elections, according to the most recent data. So, like, people that very much care.
All right. Well, here's why you should subscribe to the Dispatch. We've got a really good offer discount rate going right now, but supporting local news is so important, and particularly as the midterm elections are on us, like, who's really covering the auditor's race? Like, the New York Times, the Washington Post, you're not going to be able to cover your Ohio auditor's race. I mean, I know one of our reporters this morning was at a function with the auditor candidates, and where you really go to get that information. The Senate debate on Saturday night while Ohio State was playing, I was personally watching that because I'm genuinely interested in Jim Renacci and Sherrod Brown going at it on a debate. But everybody else is watching Ohio State Purdue. Where are you going to get that recap? Not everybody's covering that Senate race. So supporting people who are covering the issues that face the day-to-day lives of us is really important. I know a lot of these people probably listening do support media in one form or another, whether it be the Times, the Post, the Athletic, etc. But really subscribe to your hometown paper, whether it be the Dispatch, Plain Dealer, Toledo Blade, wherever you're listening. It's super important because these are people who are working hard to cover things that really matter to you. And all the support really, really goes a long way in helping us to make sure we can continue to do that.
Subscribe to the Columbus Dispatch, support local Ohio news. Follow Kevin on Twitter at Kevin Sankey. Does a lot of good reporting and over there. And if you want to just, again, learn about Ohio, follow Ohio. That's the best paper in Ohio to do so, in my opinion. But we're going to be back with one more segment after one more ad break. And then you're going to hear my three things to watch for in tonight's Cavs-Nets game, which I will watch if you don't really want to. And then you can hear about it on tomorrow's pod. But stay tuned. Three things to look for in Cavs-Nets. And thanks again to Kevin for coming on. So for me, when I look at the Nets game, I think there are some key things to look at. Number one is let's see what the rotation looks like. For starters, we have reporting now from Joe Vardon of The Athletic coming out of practice on Tuesday that basically indicates that Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith, and Channing Frye are all going to play. Kevin Love wants them to play. The front office doesn't seem to want to. Love did know they weren't going to play the other night against Atlanta. So I would expect Ty to go back to those guys in this game. That seems to be the indication that we're going to get, and maybe it's not all of them. Maybe we don't know how many minutes yet. These are things we're not going to know until that game happens and we see how Ty really approaches it. But those guys are going to play, and David Nwaba should also be in a uniform. But, you know, how does this affect Sexton? How does this affect lineups that we've seen already? I am not quite sure exactly what this is going to be. And this Kevin Love quote that I'm gonna read real quick is the most telling thing. In our commitment to helping guys grow, the guys who know how to win have to play, Kevin Love told The Athletic, in supporting Lou. I think having Kyle and Shedding and JR, those guys know how to win in this league, and having them will help bring the others along, so they need to play. And that is where we are right now. The Cavs, I think, you know, pitched to Kevin Love that they weren't going to tank out the season, bottom out. So see what these guys play, see who it affects. That's probably the big thing to watch, because that's been the biggest source, I think, of some of the drama that we have going on around this team right now. And then secondly, Jetty Osman is the guy that I am most intrigued to watch in this game. If you look at the Brooklyn Nets roster, they are full of interesting-ish wings. Now, he's going to be asked to defend, I think, a variety of different guys. The Nets are obviously don't have like any stars or all-stars this year, but Caris LeVert's having a really, really good start. The almost Ohio Bobcat, but the former Michigan Wolverine is having a really good start to the season. He's averaging almost 25 points a game, almost 5 rebounds, 4 assists. He's been great. He's a third-year pro. He's kind of the guy I think Jetty is going to be guarding in this game, and it's going to be a test for him. He could see time on D'Angelo Russell, Alan Crabb. There's a number of guys Jetty's going to be asked to defend, and particularly for me, Caris LeVert is the guy you want to see how he handles against. LeVert's been really good. He's a really, really interesting young player, and I want to see how he handles that matchup. And look, like, is he perfect? Is he like an all-star? No. Again, like, this isn't a team with all-stars, but it's going to be a challenge for him. And you look at him guarding maybe Damari Carroll as well, and chasing Joe Harris around. There's options for him to guard that are going to be interesting, and I want to see how Jetty handles it. And for like Colin Sexton on the defensive end, Dinwiddie and Russell, those are not guys he can just slouch against. I want to see how he handles this too. But let's if Jetty can have a really good bounce back game against Caris LeVert, that would probably be, to me, a very, very big positive for the Cavs if they're going to pick up their first win of the season. And then lastly, just looking at what the Cavs' defense will look like. The Nets come into this game 20th in offense per NBA.com /stats. Per 100 possessions, they are 14.4 points per 100 possessions below on offense from what the Cavs are giving up in defense so far this season per 100 possessions. That's a big gap there. So, and yes, it's small sample size, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, can the Cavs be decent enough on defense in this game, or at least be better than they have been? Brooklyn does not have an all-star A-level scorer that's really going to just destroy you and you can't do anything about it. They don't have even a player probably of Kevin Love's caliber as a scorer. And what Trae Young did the other night doesn't seem to be in the cards, although would it shock me if Dinwiddie or Russell had a big game here? No. But they're a team that runs a tight system. They're disciplined. They move well. They're well coached by Kenny Atkinson. that's going to really test the Cavs in some way, test their ability to switch, test their ability to do some of the things they really struggled with against Atlanta. Again, those teams are not the same, but they're not dissimilar. And for the Cavs, I want to see what defensively they try to do. It seems like they are going to try to switch. That's going to be something they try to do. If Channing and Kyle play, that's a less, I think, appetizing defensive strategy. So we'll see what they do there. And we'll see what that sort of looks like, if the communication's better, if 2 days of practice and some hard sessions on themselves has changed anything at all. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And look, I will say this just as we get out of here. I don't think playing Kyle and JR and Channing is the worst thing in the world. I think playing Channing and Kyle with Colin Sexton makes sense. But let's see how the Cavs approach it. Let's see what lineups they're in. And I think we'll get some clarity at least tomorrow. And then we'll get some more clarity Thursday and Saturday against when the Cavs play the Pacers on Saturday and the Pistons on Thursday. This is going to be a very interesting three-game slate for the Cavs this week. They're coming off of just a dreadful loss. The mood is already not great, and we're going to see where it goes from here. But thanks again to Kevin Stankiewicz for coming on for being the guest on most of today's pod. You can find me on Twitter at CWMWrites, the pod on Twitter at Lockdown Cavs, and on Facebook at Lockdown Cavs. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of Cavs Nets. I'll be at the queue talking to players, talking to Ty, and we'll see how that goes and what they have to say in the aftermath. So thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow. This has been Lockdown Cavaliers for Wednesday, October 24th.